Ladies and gentlemen, welcome once again to the Student of the Game. I'm Kyle, the Student of the Game, and here to my left once again, Weasel and Chris, bringing you plenty of football action. Well, not action per se, because there were no games to speak of. I mean, yeah, you had the Pro Bowl, but I mean, how seriously do we take that? I mean, you know, such highlights as J.J. Watt lining up at receiver and that sort of thing taking place. But a very interesting occurrence where Jeff Saturday, who would have lined up for the NFC Pro Bowl team, even though he was a backup, but that's aside, lined up with the AFC team to get one more snap in with Peyton Manning as he's retiring this season. So really quickly, gentlemen, cool moment there. Care front on that?
Manning's retiring?
Saturday, dumb. Come on, Weasel.
Not on Saturday?
Anyways, no.
The day before the Super Bowl, yes.
Sounded like you should be on ESPN right there. Anyways.
Yep. There we go. We all got it covered.
I'm so traumatized by how that defense made me look like I choked. I'm retiring. I had enough. I can't take it. I don't know. So anyways, but there is an awful lot of talk, you know, once again. I mean, the Pro Bowl came about, but that, you know, is always getting. It's funny. It gets a minimal rating compared to other football games, but it's still a whole lot of TV watched. So everybody really still kind of wins when they play it, except for the people maybe watching it. I don't know, but I know it's not on the agenda, but let me throw this question in front of you fellows. Should they outright get rid of the game? What's your feelings on that? Weasel, I'll start with you.
Football?
No, the Pro Bowl. Come on, stop it.
Okay, my bad.
Did you have an aneurysm before the show? Are you okay?
Yeah. Well, I think I think it's good to keep. I think it's something that it can give the players a vacation, and it's a fun atmosphere, and you get the players to actually, you know, hang out with each other, so, and play the game. So I think it's all right.
That's an interesting concept from the players' point of view. A lot of people wouldn't have thought of that, Chris.
I'd think they need to probably change the format around a little bit, because, you know, there's rumors that the players don't go tough because they don't want to injure, you know, other players because of contract issues.
Oh, I mean, yeah, there's so much money on the line for anybody.
Why not do like a 7-on-7 skeleton kind of round robin tournament or something like that?
A pass skelly?
Yeah, that'd be kind of neat, you know, kind of like a flag football or.
You know, of all the people that would suggest to leave out the beef, I would not have expected it to be you.
I'm just bring back those other drills that they used to do years ago. They used to televise, you know, with the
skills challenge.
Yeah. And also, you don't hear those that much anymore. They used to do that leading up to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, they were playing that on NFL Network. You saw, you know, back in the day when LaDainian Tomlinson was still the Charger, and then occasionally you'll see a couple guys. Oh gosh, I wonder if he's even still alive. You know, that kind of thing.
You see Warren Sapp go through the gauntlet. The receivers and running backs do.
Right,
yeah, that was cool.
Something special about a 290-pound guy who can do that. I'm just saying. You know, and I mean, for me, the part we're leaving out, though, is there's a lot of camaraderie surrounding the game. I mean, a lot of credentials for players, or debate about the talent of players, how many Pro Bowls they've been to is a factor. Like, we may not remember the fact that Kyle Rudolph was the Pro Bowl MVP. No offense, Weasel. But we will be able to mention, hey, Kyle Rudolph ain't that bad. He's made it to a Pro Bowl. You know, that kind of thing, which, I mean, it makes sense for him to go there for the NFC, considering that Vernon Davis is missing for the Super Bowl. I mean, Gonzalez was there. It makes sense for him to fit in, and he should get that kind of accolades to be invited to a Pro Bowl. Really, the Pro Bowl needs to exist, but it has nothing to do with the game as why it needs to exist. It's all that surrounding stuff. Weasel mentioned the vacation aspect. Not just for players, though, but for fans, too. They put together packages where fans get all kinds of access that they wouldn't normally get. You know, but in the case of football, I prefer all-star games that are exhibitions. The stuff that they do in baseball where it determines the outcome of home field advantage is just garbage. But it's about the discussion that fans have. The fans get to vote. There's contests surrounding voting, all kinds of stuff. I don't know. People may say that the process is a little bit tarnished because of the fans' involvement, but at some point, leagues need to do something for their fans of sports. I'm just saying. Anyways, let's go ahead and switch topics now. There's been somebody very interesting commented on the whole head trauma discussion. It's something that you wouldn't really expect to hear from, but actually the president today made some comments regarding football and head injuries and all the concerns. He said that if he had a son, he would, quote, think long and hard about letting him play football. And, you know, now it's kind of falling into the thing where Kurt Warner said the same thing earlier on about whether or not he'd let his son play, and other NFL players that are now retired have said the same thing, you know, regarding their children and all that. Weasel, with President Obama making this comment, what kind of impact do you think it would have?
Well, I think it'll make the parents of their kids where they play Pop Warner or play tackle to maybe think again, because a child's brain develops and it's keeping on developing up into the teens, and right. So what I think a lot of families are doing is that you have them play, like, you know, flag football or something like that up until the age of, I think it was 14. Mm-hmm. And then you introduce them to, you know, tackle football.
You know, and that's kind of a thought I had to myself here today, too. And I mean, it's kind of like, I mean, not for nothing, I personally kind of did it this way myself before I went and played semi-pro football. I played some flag football and, you know, gotten some footwork stuff right and gotten some fundamentals right, and then I added in the physical aspect. Now, people are like, but Kyle, you block. How did you develop that? Well, I got my footwork right because you gentlemen played it at intramural flag football after college with me, and you couldn't use your hands, but you could shuffle your feet back and forth to put your body between whoever was rushing. So if you could keep your defender in front of you without using your hands, just imagine how much more dangerous you are than when you introduce that physical element of collision and control and all that. It's a very interesting concept, and it works all the same for receivers too. You know, learn how to run routes, learn how to get your technique right. Same thing for DBs. Learn how to drop back, learn how to do your back pedal, all that kind of stuff, and then translate the basic fundamentals and then add the physical element. I mean, it's kind of what NFL teams or teams of any ilk do on a small and microcosm to prepare their teams, right? That's a very interesting point, Weasel. I like that. I like that. Chris, any thoughts that you may have as far as not just the impact of what Obama said, but, like, is there, I don't know, you have a son. I mean, I'll go ahead and ask you the question as the resident parent on the panel. When Adam gets to proper age, if he shows interest, how will House Rankin vote?
Yeah, I'm all for it. And just go into basics, teach him the right way on how to tackle, how to hit. Don't lead with your head.
Which he's already done, by the way. And Adam's what, three?
He's
two?
Four.
Four? Yeah. Okay, Adam's four, and he's already mastered it. Ed Reed, take a note. I'm just saying. That's right, I said it. Yeah. I still believe that Ed Reed's a Hall of Famer, but his form still sucks. It's all I'm trying to tell you. But, I mean, yeah, that makes sense. So, and you mentioned education as a part of it, too. Like, you may have heard about these programs that the NFL starting to institute where they have even parents lining up. You know, they're not running drills or anything, but, like, they have them all stand in the square, like, you know, a warm-up square or whatever, like you'd be doing stretching exercises before a game or something, and then walking them through the basic 1-2-3 technique, you know, wrap, lift, you know, all this stuff, and making the parents kind of walk through it to see how simple it really can be. And I mean, Chris, I don't know if you would be intending on coaching Adam or any of that, but would the coaches, would the coaches' technique in coaching, in this case, Adam, because we're using you as a microcosm right now, I mean, that would really determine on whether he kept playing or not, or at least for that coach, is how that coach executed his craft, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's all basically how the kids learn is how they play, basically, throughout, you know, if you start them off young and you teach them the right way to do it and kind of penalize them for doing it the wrong way, because if you don't, you know, if they're doing it the wrong way, you know, have them sit out a play or whatever, you know, especially the star players that are, you know, oh, man, oh, I'm out here because I'm doing something wrong, they're going to fix that, so they're going to be out on the field. I mean, that's the only way kids learn is by doing. So you teach them the right way to do it, they're going to learn it, and it's going to carry on through it. And it's harder to break a habit than to try later on to try to teach an old dog new tricks.
It's easier to build a new habit than it is to break one. That's just, I mean, we're saying the same thing, but right. that's essentially what's going on there too. Another interesting quote that came out about this kind of concern then too, is kind of the other extreme, the other difference. And we mentioned something about this while we were talking to our friend of the show, Tom Kernan, about concussions and stuff. Bernard Pollard, a DB for the Ravens, who this year he's most famously known for knocking the fumble out of Stephen Ridley's hand to propel the Ravens to the Super Bowl. That fumble, of course, being in the AFC Championship game that I'm talking about. But he said something along the lines of that in another 30 years, there won't be any more NFL football. And that's a very interesting concept. So, Chris, let me start with you on this one. I'll ask you bluntly, is he right? I mean...
No, I don't think he is, to be honest with you. It's just... I think it's far-fetched a little bit.
A little far-fetched?
Yeah.
I don't know. Weasel, what do you got?
Yeah, I think it's far-fetched. It's, I mean, say the NFL. The NFL is so strong. It's so big. It's so profitable. They're going to have to sometime take care of all these lawsuits with, I think there's over like 4,000 families.
Right. That might be the only way that the NFL is not done. It's going to have to shut down with all these... with all his lawsuits, but then football still continue on, but with some other name.
Well, gentlemen, I'm forced before because both of y'all dropped the far-fetched thing, which really kind of surprises me that you both went right on the far-fetched bandwagon. Let me be clear. I don't think he's absolutely correct. I don't think the NFL will go away. I agree with you two to the extent that there's a lot of money in it, obviously. But 30 years ago, right? What is that, the 80s?
Yeah, early 80s.
Early 80s. Who were some big athletes about that time? Perhaps
Bo Jackson,
Mike Tyson. Boxing used to be a big deal. You go back in the 70s, it was an even bigger deal. It was even bigger than football, these fights that were coming out. Tyson Spinks, for example, was a 90-second fight, and people were bitching all over the place because it was only a 90-second fight, and they paid all this money to watch it on Showtime, and it was a joke. But what I'm getting to is this, that... didn't used to be a sport that you just hear about every now and again. It was on the front page. It was making headlines. Now, first of all, boxing is not even the top, quote-unquote, fighting sport. Because the MMA, I think the MMA is overtaken. And I could be wrong. I don't have the numbers in front of me. But I certainly hear a lot more about UFC than I do about boxing. I can't, you know. But that's another example of a violent sport that fell from grace. Because of violence, people saw what happened to Muhammad Ali, for example, and the fact that he has the condition that he has, and it kind of changed the direction of the sport. You know, now instead of being known for beating Muhammad Ali, George Foreman's known for eating hamburgers off of his grill. You know, it's not as far-fetched as you imply, but with all these programs that the NFL is putting in place. You know, with all the education and stuff that's coming out, I don't think we can account for what that's going to have as far as in a positive manner on the NFL as well in the future. I don't know. I mean, it's interesting that both of you guys said, oh, that can't happen. That's far-fetched. But, I mean, I have to point out the boxing example just as an example of something. Not only is it not far-fetched, it's happened.
But the thing with the boxing, though, with what you said with the UFC coming on, that's when it started dying down was... When the MMA started, you knew evolution of different fighting coming on strong. Everyone would rather watch MMA than boxing because you got...
It's a lot more complicated, first of all. I agree.
Right, and it's a little more entertaining than just two guys just swinging punches at each other.
You know, maybe. Yeah, I mean, I can't completely say no, but I mean, Lennox Lewis was the last famous heavyweight I can think of off the bat, and he was about done in the 90s. I guess.
And my other final point is baseball's been around how long and it's still around and not that many people still watch it.
Well, the reason why they don't watch it has nothing to do with violence, I dare say. Anyways.
I come back to Carlin, George Carlin with the difference between football and baseball.
That should be on the soundboard. I need some excerpts from that. I don't want that would be tight.
Football, you wear a helmet. Baseball, you wear a cap.
Football is played in the stadium. Baseball is in the plate in the park. Anyways. I know that's not exactly right, but I'm, you know, hey.
It was close. It was stadiums more like Soldier Field, War Memorial
Stadium. The ballpark. You get the idea. But no, anyways, speaking of violence, though, earlier, Greg Williams has come up again in the news as far as the piece for reinstatement. See what I did there? Because he's the guy who was the actual original 100% source and mastermind for Bountygate and the bounty scandal in New Orleans. A lot of people are talking about the concept of him being reinstated in the coming season. And should he be reinstated, there's talk that he'll be hired with the Titans. Now, for those who may or may not remember, the Titans was where he was, I believe, immediately before the Saints with Jeff Fisher. So interesting. He was hired in St. Louis. Now he's not. He was let go after the suspension, and now he's going to go back to the Titans and whatever. The point is, I'll make it very simple. Reinstatement, pro or con, and give me a why, gentlemen. Chris,
I said it last year when it came out. It should be a con. It should have been banned for life, mm-hmm. not this indefinite or whatever. I hate that word.
The indefinite suspension, yes. Yeah. It is kind of like, you know, kind of messing around, not drawing a line in the sand.
But I said, if he set this whole scheme, and it wasn't just with the Saints, but it went back with the Redskins and, you know,
and
all
the
other
Titans.
Teams, Titans, where he was before, mm-hmm. you know, for years of it. But, you know, I said, since he orchestrated it, you can hear players orchestrate it because they're players, you know, they're all...
They
usually have money on it. Hey, I'm gonna have. I have like 50 on getting 10 tackles, or I got 50. I'm gonna put someone out before you.
I mean, yeah, it wasn't so much the 10 tackles part. It was the give me 10 grand to get Favre out the game on the stretcher and all that. You know,
right?
But I don't know. So that's interesting. Weasel.
Well, I think with Greg Williams, you could say like kind of like Michael Vick. He paid his dues.
Mm-hmm.
Vic was in jail for, I think, like 3 years or a couple years?
Two years. Yep.
And Greg Williams was out of football entirely. Now, if they give him another chance, he's going to be on a very short leash. So it was pretty messed up, especially with the audio tape that came out.
Oh, yeah. About specifically talking about hitting Crabtree in his knee
Kyle Williams' concussion.
Thank
Test
you.
That.
Kyle Williams in the head. There you go. Thank you.
So he did some terrible things, but, I mean... If he comes back, I mean, it just—he better turn it around. So.
Well, I mean, that definitely goes without saying. But you make the point. A lot of the thing I keep hearing is, "Oh, he paid his debt. He paid his debt. Did he? What was the term of his suspension? Anybody? Indefinite, right?
Yes.
You know who decides whether he's paid his debt? It ain't you, me, or anybody for any four-letter or three-letter network. It comes down to one dude, and that's Roger Goodell. What about this gentleman? You mentioned these websites. You mentioned these lawsuits previously. Is there any way the NFL can afford to let him back in the context of trying to keep players safe in that court case? How can they possibly let look good letting him back in the concept of player safety?
That's a good point. Good point.
Hold on. You know, I mean, I'm not getting on to you. Let me be clear. You aren't the one that has inspired this fire in this. These four people on a panel on a four-letter network show that I watched all came in this garbage about he paid his debt. We don't know that. The damage he did, we may not know if that ever has gone away.
And 1 year does not pay your debt. I'm sorry.
And here's the other thing. Unless they're going to have another convenient microphone in the Titans building or facility or whatever you want to call it, how do we know he's not going to revert and go back and do the same damn thing? How can we prevent that? Because if I'm Roger Goodell, that can't happen. If I'm anyone in the NFL, that can't happen. It's just very clear. Anyways, so, you know, rant over for the moment. So, with that, gentlemen, you guys want to go? You want to do the quarterback drill? You want to go ahead and go into the Super Bowl? There's that whole national holiday thing coming
up.
Well,
whichever you prefer. I mean, we can do the quarterback issue if you like.
Well, I'll tell you what. We're going to do the break at 8 here. So let's go ahead and go to our quarterback piece. Now, for those out there following me as I'm doing an excellent job of being a producer in the middle of the show, my co-host and I have kind of thought about, you know, there's a long list of teams that have mediocre quarterbacks or need new ones, and we're going to tell them exactly what they should do now. I have a list. Do you have a list in front of you?
I got the list in front of me, and I broke it down to what their draft pick is, so we even have a better chance.
All right, run the show, Chris. You got it.
So, you know, team that we said first is the Chiefs. They got the first overall pick in the draft coming up.
My advice for the Chiefs, burn the damn building down and run home. I mean, there's a whole lot of heap of trouble there. I mean, who are the draft picks? They're the top draft pick, you said, right?
Yeah, they're the number one draft pick.
I don't know. Weasel, let me ask you. Colin Klein, Matt Barclay, Geno Smith. Any of these quarterbacks impressing you as pro talent?
Not as a top five pick.
No, but not really. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't even see a top 10, to be honest with you, quarterbacks coming out.
Well, here's the truth, though. Someone's going to take them at any of those spots. So, I mean, for my money, if I'm KC, I'm looking for an Alex Smith or something like that, which is pretty much the best I can do right now. I mean, I don't know of any other, unless the Eagles release Vic, that's another option, but I don't know if they want to touch that with a 10-foot pole either.
And yeah, also you got Matt Flynn.
Matt Flynn... Yeah, that's an interesting concept.
He doesn't have much, experience. He had that one game for Green Bay. And
but do you want to pick up that contract? Yeah. I mean, I don't know. That's a whole lot of tough situation. Weasel, any other alternatives there you could think of?
I don't think so.
But I think we all agree staying with Castle and Quinn, not the best plan.
No, not at all.
Okay, and you're nodding. Guys, this is radio, not TV. Right.
Well, I think if Casey... They may trade up, maybe.
Or rather trade
down.
Back.
Trade down.
Trade down and then, eventually trade up for a quarterback that they like. So
trade toward. I see what you're saying.
So that, I mean, you have your Andrew Lux. You have your RG3. But
not in this draft, you don't.
What I'm saying is they got to look for that second round or third round quarterback. You get Colin Kaepernick for the 49ers, not this past year, but the year before.
And then Dalton the year before that.
Dalton and Russell Wilson was the third round pick.
Russell Wilson's an excellent call.
So they got to find a guy there.
Okay.
Because pushing it with that number one pick.
Yeah, see, that's why they'll have the first pick overall in the second round. So they don't have to move back up or anything.
Yeah.
So they can always try to.
They can try to do it then. Okay.
If there's anyone out there, there's not that strong of a quarterback draft this year.
I wonder how many people are like, you know, let's skip the quarterback this year and try to get Johnny Football. I'm just throwing that out there.
And you still got two more years for Johnny Football.
Yeah, I know. Hey, they'll be eight. They're patient.
Two more years, I'm just saying.
Anyways, Chris, who's next on the list?
Next would be the Jags.
The Jags. Currently sitting with Blaine Gabbert and Chad Henne. You know, go ahead and get it out of the way, Weasel.
Tebow.
So who do you think they should get? No, I mean, seriously, that's a rough situation, too. I mean, I think it's safe now. I mean, we've been trying to give Gabbert a fighting chance because he's not had talent around him. But am I the only one who thinks it's time to cut the cord on that?
No, I'd still say give him one more year. I mean, this year he didn't have Mojo.
Right.
Mojo was out kind of a lot. But really, they need an offensive line. We've been saying that the last couple of years. They take that second round pick and draft an offensive lineman. Like what the Niners did a few years ago, where they took an offensive tackle or offensive guard, then offensive tackle in the second round.
Leonard Davis and Mike Iupati.
Right.
So
I think they need to go in that book right there. It is just to go after offensive linemen. There's actually a few teams here that need to go offensive linemen in the first round. There's a couple good offensive linemen coming out of the draft.
Okay.
And look what the Vikings did this year with picking Matt Khalil.
Yeah. It's an interesting thought. Weasel?
Well,
I mean, as far as what the Jags should try to do?
Well, I think they got to stick with Blaine Gabbert for. I would give him one more year.
So you would
also
give him one year as well, okay.
Yeah, because you need some stability out there, like the offensive line, as Chris was saying. But the but maybe bring in, like, I don't know if they want to keep Chad Henne, but maybe bring in a guy like an Alex Smith or something like that that can step in.
Dropping that Alex Smith again. What, no TiVo? Yeah. No, just kidding.
Henne didn't do too bad at the end of the season, though. I mean, you got the emergence of...
He had some good, some bad.
Yeah. I know. That's the Jags offensive line, too. But, you know, the emergence of CS3.
Yeah. CS3.
Yeah, with Blackmon there.
Yeah, Justin Blackmon had some good games, too.
You get Mojo. If Mojo ever gets healthy, maybe they need to take the second-round pick and go... It's kind of high for running back in this draft, too.
See, we keep bringing up Mojo. You know, I got to tell you, Montel Owens and Rashard Jennings didn't do bad filling in. I mean, they get a lot of yards, even in games where the Jags were out of it early.
But it's just the presence of Mojo.
He's a bigger threat.
Right.
I'm not saying he's not. Yeah. But I mean, wasn't a serviceable run game in support. No, what I'm trying to say is if they have an opportunity to ship him and get some sort of a pick back for a decent quarterback, I've heard worse ideas.
Yeah. I'd still say offensive line.
I can't front on that. I don't know. Anyways, give me another
next
one, Chris.
Eagles.
Oh, boy. See, you know, I don't see what you're saying for the Jags. I'd say for the Eagles.
That's what I had here, too, for the Eagles to go offensive lineman. There's more than one. So
I mean, Peters and Runyon are both guys they've lost over the past couple seasons. And people want to blame Vic. But look, even though Vic can run, if you're running for your life every time, you're in trouble. And eventually he got knocked out of the game. Nick Foles isn't bad, but he's not the answer right now.
Remember, he was a rookie last year. So
correct.
Or this year.
I don't think he would have been ready to hit the field as a starter for as many games as he was this season or the season coming. I mean, I think... The concept was, you know, as Vic got closer to finishing his contract out, that's when they, you know, start to transition him. I don't know. But I know that Vic is due a ridiculous number on his contract this year, too. So that's all the more reason they may cut him. I don't know. I can't think of another quarterback off the bat that would make sense to put there either, too, unless, like, the Skins. See, that's the thing. We'd be talking more about the Skins possibly using Kirk Cousins as bait, but... With RG3's leg, that's a bit of a sticky situation.
Right. And going back with the Eagles, you do have Chip Kelly coming in.
Yeah.
And Vic fits more of that offense. That's why they go with offensive linemen here.
Huh. That's interesting. The pro edition of Dennis Dixon is is Michael Vick. I mean, I know that's not the most current Oregon quarterback, but anyways. I don't know. That's an interesting point. I don't know. Anything to add to that, Weasel?
Nope.
All right. Chris?
You got Raiders. They're in the fifth overall.
Well,
this is like the Kansas City Chiefs. Just employ it. Just light it on fire and run away.
Let me lead off with this. Let's not go after Jamarcus Russell, who's trying to make a quarterback at the grand old weight of 308 pounds. Jay Lorenzen called. He says, I was even lighter than that. I'm just saying.
Yeah, Jay Lorenzen wasn't lighter than that.
Oh no, he was about.
I think he was about 320, but he still ran like 4.7 40.
Yeah, well, I thought he eventually got down to 290. I could be wrong, but no, that kid,
big boy.
I don't know, Weasel. Do you have as somebody who watched the Vikings do what they did and rely on a running game with a quarterback that's any advice for the Raiders?
Oh. You got Darren McFadden.
Uh-huh.
And he needs to get healthy. I think they also have the Reese guy.
Marcel Reese. Excellent drop pro bowler, by the way.
Now, with what they need to do, it's got to be the offensive line. And draft a third round or a fourth round prospect to go under Carson Palmer. Because they gave up a couple first round picks for Carson Palmer.
Yes, they did.
So
you don't believe in Terrell Pryor either, apparently,
or Matt Leinart.
Yeah, so
I don't know. I understand the dumpster fire defense on that as well.
What hurt the Raiders was a couple years ago when they went with speed.
Yeah,
in the draft,
Darius Haywood Bay, among others. There. Anyway, so we're coming up here on 8 o'clock on the midway break here. You are listening to the Student of the Game podcast. Here I'm Kyle, the Student of the Game, here with Weasel and Chris, and want to take a moment to tell you about iDraft here, coming soon from the makers of iScout, the 2013 iDraft. get ready for something completely different. This isn't your same old fantasy routine or misguided mock draft. This is the real deal. iDraft is a web app that allows you to take your knowledge of college football talent and your passion for the NFL draft to a whole different level. Why be told who your team should take when you could show them how it's done? iDraft, you're on the clock. You can visit them at www.idraft.com. That's EYE-draft.com. You know, and I would have nailed that if my co-host would let me finish the damn read. Anyways.
Story of his life. Always too soon.
We're so sorry for you, Amanda. Anyways. Woohoo. You know, that was almost worth you interrupting me for Chris to say that, too.
I'm like, dude, too soon. Come on. He has like two more lines left. Come on.
So, yeah. and you know, the cool thing, on Saturday, this past Saturday, I was on the Sports Chronicles radio show, and we actually talked to the guys who were breaking iDraft out. And they're having a contest. If you go to iDraft.com, that's EYE-draft.com. The second one there for you, Weasel, so you can feel good about it. And they were saying that they're having a contest too. If you go over to the site and you register your email address, they'll get you in on the beta and get that all rolling, and they'll enroll you in a contest. And the person that selects their team and drafts as close to what their team does to tickets to the Super Bowl. So that's a pretty sweet little prize, which I probably will have no hope to win because I won't draft anything like the pros want to because, well, I'm just not that great a draft expert. But, hey, you know, this goes into so much detail. It considers, you know, different drills. There we go. I was going to say skills. I'm like, different drills players run and different surfaces they run them on and things like that. So it can get as detailed as you want or could be as casual as you want there. Anyways, but I don't know why we're talking about the draft. There's this game coming up. It's in a bowl, and it's pretty super. It's only an American holiday, for goodness sake, folks. Super Bowl 37 in New Orleans coming at us here this coming Sunday. Yes, I know we made our picks, but we got to talk about it a little bit anyway. If we got time, we'll get back to the quarterback carousel there a little bit later. But, gentlemen, I'm hearing this. I'm going to have to make another point again that I've made in the past with Super Bowls. It seems like the past decade, we are spoiled when it comes to Super Bowls. Like, I mean, think about it. When you used to go to watch the Super Bowl, 9 times out of 10, the game wasn't close. I mean, think about the last time, for example, the Niners won the Super Bowl. Steve Young has 6 touchdowns in 1995 over the Chargers. Think back to 2001. For the 2007 season, no offense, Chris, but the Ravens spanked Kerry Collins and the Giants all over the field.
That all comes back to the phantom holding call on Jesse Armstead.
Right, because 32-7 was all set.
That was the big change right there.
Okay.
That was interception return for a touchdown. That was momentum the other way.
Well, right.
0-0.
Right, but then the Giants got the punt return right back after that to try to get momentum, and then they gave up one. There was 3 touchdowns in 36 seconds. That's all I'm trying to tell you.
Collins was paid off anyway.
It looked like it, didn't it?
Yeah, carrying like the football like a loaf of bread.
Anyways, let's get away from Giant bitterness and go over to the fact that then 3 years later you got the Bucks spanking the Raiders in the Super Bowl. Yeah, I know Tuck rule and all that, but no, not really. That was the year after the Tuck rule, but you know, when you're partying in Tijuana. Oh, wait. No, Bill Callahan, he threw the Super Bowl. Hey, let's take a minute on that, if we can, please. Do either one of you lend credence to the concept of Bill Callahan throwing the Super Bowl?
No, I do not at all. They're saying, oh, because he changed the game plan 2 days before the Super Bowl.
And? Weasel, I see you shaking your head. I'm going to take that as a no.
Correct.
One of the greatest minds in sports and football. There's the reason why he's on this show, for such in-depth analysis.
maybe it shouldn't go to him. Maybe it should have been Rich Gannon. How many interceptions did he throw that game?
Was he paid off?
Yeah,
or is John Lynch that good? I don't know. I'm just saying. No, the part that really drove me nuts about that is Tim Brown. I don't really feel like Tim Brown was saying he threw the game so much either. But, okay, so we're taking it there and all that, fine. then that's what's released. And then Jerry Rice jumps in and supports Tim Brown on that. I'm like, what? I don't know. That whatever. Here's my whole thing, and I'm going to leave it at this. Bill Callahan was not a popular guy within the NFL ranks. They thought he was kind of what they commonly refer to in the vernacular as a D-bag. But if he's that big a D-bag, now suddenly he's going to decide to be nice to the guy whose job he just took in Oakland and let him have a Super Bowl. I don't know. So that was another, 2003 was another Super Bowl with a wide gap in it, right? That was a pretty big beat down. Then shortly after that, we start getting these Patriot wins that are 3 points, you know. Then we got the two Giant victories in there somewhere. The Seattle.
One of the Patriots game was the 2002 Super Bowl.
Right.
So that was by a field goal.
Okay. But there was three of them, two of them were after that 2003 Super Bowl, so, right? I mean, we're starting to get into that decade range somewhere in there. I know that Seahawks game with the Steelers Weasel was kind of a beatdown. But the second Super Bowl win against the Cardinals was pretty close, you know. The point is, the Niners are only favored 4.5 on the Steelers, and I even think that's too high as the quote-unquote homer in the room. I don't know. So,
Steelers-Seahawks was 11 points.
Yeah. So, Weasel, let me ask you this question. You are the Ravens defensive coordinator. You need to stop the Niners. What do you do? What do you do?
They have to keep calling
Kaepernick.
They got to keep him in the pocket. Can't let him go and run around, because the guy's got some mad skills at scrambling.
Mad skills.
So defensive wise, the Ravens need to shut down the run, and both teams have to shut down the run.
Right.
Rice is a very, very good player, and you got Gore on the other end.
Right.
So it'll be a big defensive game. I think it's going to be fairly low scoring, but yeah.
How do you account for Vernon Davis?
Well, I don't know. They put a linebacker on him. I don't think he's too fast for that.
Really? Okay.
Vernon Davis. Well, no, I was saying...
The linebacker's not fast enough for Vernon
Davis.
Oh,
okay. I misunderstood. Yeah. Okay. That makes more sense then. Go ahead.
So maybe if they take a...
Nickel? Oh. Dime?
Safety?
Well, if they take a, like, a corner, a cover guy.
Okay.
And stick him on Vernon Davis, that's it. I think that could help him out.
You got to remember their two starting corners are out for the season.
That stinks.
Well, even on top of that, so if you were to take a corner to cover Davis, now you got to worry about
Crabtree
and Moss. They're okay. I don't mean to imply you're wrong, but this is the problem that the Niners offense creates. Everything you said was a very valid and correct point. I would even add this in. If you put a cover corner on Davis, you may shut down the big play, but now over the middle, Vernon Davis is going to be a possession receiver, because I don't know if you notice, he's kind of big. Just going to throw that out there.
And you got to realize the Falcons tried shutting down Kaepernick last week, keeping him in the pocket. He only had 2 rushes for 22 yards, and he hurt him with his arm.
Well, yeah, he hurt him with his arm. That's 1 point. Hitting Vernon Davis long, for example. Crabtree had a 100-yard game. And, oh, by the way, don't forget that that Gore averaged about 4 yards a carry because and again, this isn't to say that your defensive strategy is wrong. These are just the challenges it produces, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you spread as the Eagles' line, or excuse me, Eagles, wrong bird, the Ravens' line, Hiloti Nada, your biggest defensive line threat, is now more susceptible to double teams. And Joe Staley would have an easier time slowing Terrell Suggs. So unless you get, you know, Ray Ray involved in blitzing up the middle or something of that sort, you know, but then if you send the blitz, now Davis is opened up and, you know, your head starts spinning. I mean, you all the points you brought up were good, but just trying to demonstrate the challenge that is this crew. Chris, let me put you on. Let me put the headset on your head. If you're the San Fran defensive coordinator, how do you stop the Ravens offense?
I would blitz almost every down for Flacco, because he kind of falters and under pressure if he can't get the ball out quick. you know, like the hit Torrey Smith or Anquan Boldin or even Dennis Pitta. Mm-hmm. You know, if he can't get the ball out quick, you know, he's known to, you know, try to take a chance.
Right.
And, you know, the Niners secondary, yeah, they gave up a couple big plays to Julio Jones last week, but I don't see him doing
11 catches. And then, well, it's not that Roddy White had a slow game either. He had 8 catches for 100 yards himself.
And last week was the first time the Niners gave up a pass over 40 yards in like 4 years. I don't think it was that long, but it was like a year and a half.
Well, I would venture to ask you this question too, gentlemen. When else during this season have the Niners faced a player, not counting Calvin Johnson, that was capable of that kind of a threat? I mean, there's probably someone you could give me on as a member of the Green Bay squad that could be a deep threat like that. Maybe like a Randall Cobb, James Jones, something like that, Jordy Nelson. But beyond that, oh, yeah, Victor Cruz, there's that. But the big play threat there is what worries me. But if Chris's plan works, that's off the table. Here's what I'm worried about if you go with the all-out blitz attack on Flacco.
You got the screen.
Hey, he did a diddle. Ray Rice up in the middle. Yeah. That's right. But, you know, you got to rely on Bowman to seal that up, I guess, behind Willis or whoever it is you send. Do you really think you'll need to do that much blitzing? Would you have to be able? Do you think Aldon Smith and Justin Smith can create enough pressure?
Both of them have been injured. Now they're since they had that extra week off with, you know, injuries, are probably healed up a little bit.
Yep.
You probably don't need to. You need to at least send 4. You know, occasionally send 5.
Right.
They are a 3-4 defense, so you'd have to send 4 at least every time. Account for Ray Rice. You shut down the run game, make him one dimensional. You know, make Flacco beat you with his arm. You know, you don't have just Torrey Smith going down the field. You also got Jacoby Jones, like, you know, down the field as well.
Right.
And you got the possession with Anquan Boldin and Dennis Pitta. So,
their
work's cut out on them on there. You know, but
how would you cover Torrey Smith?
I would do the blank, kind of like blanket coverage with the safety over the top.
Okay, so he'd have safety help.
Yeah, I'd get a cover too.
Okay.
Almost every time.
So then at this point, then what that does though, and not to say that that's the wrong approach, but here's the risk with that.
You got the middle open.
You got Boldin now on more isolated coverage. You got Dennis Pitta on more isolated coverage. And then, hey, diddle diddle, he's still going to be in the middle. You know, so I mean, this is what's so very unique about this particular Super Bowl is both these teams are defensive renowned. There's no question. But both offenses are very confusing schemes. You know, it's a very interesting concept. And I mean, I know we did our picks already, but I think the thing that gives the Niners the edge in your particular direction is, you know, not only the Kaepernick factor, but these guys are also full. I shouldn't say full. They're deep at the fullback position. Well, why does that matter? If they're coming out of the pistol, that's 2 more targets you got to try to account for on defense. And Gore can catch the pass, too. Oh, no, by the way, LaMichael James, he's been a little bit busy.
Well, talk about the pistol, the formation for the 49ers with Kaepernick.
Okay, well, I mean, as far as what that is, that's 2 running backs and the quarterback all in the backfield, right?
Not always 2 running backs, though.
Well, that's true.
It's just the quarter. They call it the pistol because the quarterback's in a shotgun, but he's only like 3 yards back.
Right.
He's not his normal 5 yards.
Yeah, 4 yards back, and usually he lined up with a running back. It doesn't have to be 2, yeah.
It doesn't even have to be with the running back. Running back's usually behind him. That's why they call it the pistol.
Right, but oftentimes they've had 2 in the way that the Niners run it, right?
Yeah, they usually have a fullback next to Kaepernick or...
Which, by the way, they need to never line up Vernon Davis in the fullback spot ever again because we all know you're not going to try to block with frickin' Vernon Davis, okay? This isn't Gronk. I'm just saying. But yeah, I mean, so with that shorter distance behind the line, Kaepernick has more, or I should say less distance that gives him a better opportunity to push forward with his legs if he needs to. But as Chris very astutely put it, he's proven he can make those big throws with his arm that other players, Alex Smith, can't. So, did I say that out loud?
Yeah.
I don't know.
You got to remember, he got drafted in baseball. But he wanted to play football as a pitcher in baseball.
He's not pretty enough to be a baseball player.
Yeah, too many tattoos, that's what it is.
You can't go to the big show, boy. You got too many tattoos. as funny. I can see some guy chewing some tobacco and going up to him. Yeah. You know, you'd be a great ball player. You didn't have so many tattoos. Anyways, I don't even know. So, as far as that, with the Ravens side, though, I mean, do they have any other advantages beyond the whole, what's his word, intangible concept with Ray Lewis, you know, the Rayoffs, as they've been called lately in the concept of the Ravens, with this postseason being all about his swan song and all that? I mean, is there any tactical advantage? Is there any place where you feel like the Ravens are going to win the battle in this game? Got awful quiet.
I'm just trying to think. I mean, normally with the Ravens, you'd say their defense, mm-hmm. but how their defense played. Yeah, in the playoffs, they played pretty well, but throughout the season, they've given up over 200 yards a couple, like 3 weeks in a row. That's
true.
Like unheard of them. Yeah, Ray Lewis wasn't in then.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, I'd say they're aging on the defensive side of the ball with Ray Lewis, you know, Ed Reed. Without their corners there, I think that's where they struggle, and that's where the Niners are going to exploit is the secondary.
Sure.
And that right there, if you're looking for strength with the defense, I don't see it. The only thing is maybe to pressure Kaepernick, see if he crumbles with how, you know, young he is.
Yeah, no, that's an interesting concept.
That's the only thing I could really see.
Force him to win it. And you mentioned this concept where they're not too deep at corner. I'm going to put in something very interesting. Does Ted Ginn make an appearance and have a big game, or perhaps a Kyle Williams? I don't know. It's hard for me to say it and mean it, too.
I'd still see more of Vernon Davis having another big game, mm-hmm. and also Kenyatta Walker hitting him out.
You know, and I wrote this in my Super Bowl preview that will be posted on Pro Player Insiders and the Student of Game website, among other places. Vernon Davis and Torrey Smith represent the deep threats that actually stretch their opposing defenses that make the races of the stuff underneath possible. You know, so Torrey Smith, look, he's a lanky, fast guy. It makes sense to see him as a deep threat. Vernon Davis is a bit more unorthodox, but he has the same thing going. So all of them have a challenge for the defense at all three levels of the field, up front at the line, the second level with the linebackers, and down the field with the safeties and corners. That's what makes both these teams so very unique. I never would have expected the Niners to be scoring 30 and 40 and darn near 50 points in certain games, but lo and behold, here it came. The thing we got to be careful with the Ravens is they had a lot of injuries, but then people started to come back. You know, Ray looks bionic. Hell, he averages 14 friggin' tackles a game in the postseason. 14 tackles a game in the post. 14 tackles a game in the postseason.
That's fine.
Thank you, Weasel. I was hoping you would get the cute. No, I'm just kidding. But Ed Reed is still a presence, but he's not picking balls off. I think that's because people are worried about him. So perhaps.
I think he was just getting old and he's lost a step.
Yeah, we'll certainly find out in this game. You know, do you think there's an element where all this hype and excitement to play for Ray could be a detriment? Does this defense come out thinking too much?
I don't think they come out thinking too much. They've been around so long, they don't need to think too much. how much they played.
Except for these corners that are coming in as backups.
But right. But, I mean, other than that, you still got Ed Reed back there in the back, you know, telling them where to go and everything. But
and up front with Courtney Upshaw, he got the same thing. He's got Haluti Nada and, you know, Ray and Terrell Suggs to lead the way with them. So Paul Kruger as well should be mentioned. That's an unappreciated guy who could start pretty much anywhere if you ask me. But
right.
I don't know. Anyways, so to reiterate, all three of us think the Niners are going to win, but I had to pick the Ravens and try for the three-way tie. So that way, if my team loses, we still win. Anyways, I don't know. Gentlemen, something I realized we didn't talk about here. We got 10 minutes left, so I'll go ahead and bring it up now. The Darrell Revis trade rumor. You guys heard about this? Weasels?
Yeah. You
have? Okay. So, Weasel, I'll float to you and let Chris weigh in next. Should this happen?
I think the Jets are just worried about him recovering. But what are they going to ask for him? That's what I'm wondering.
Yeah, that's a $64,000 question.
Because he is coming off. He's going to be coming back from a ACL injury,
right?
And a lot of teams do need like that shutdown corner. I would want him to go to a team like the Vikings, but they play a cover two. So having a lockdown cornerback isn't very good for that scheme.
What about for your other team?
Oh, the Steelers could definitely use him.
Yeah. Without hesitation. Oh, the Steelers could definitely use him.
Because he can isolate a player and take him out. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's got skills like that. And if he recovers, then, I mean, Jets getting rid of him, they better get something good for him. Because I don't know. I think it's a bad move for the Jets.
You think they shouldn't trade him? Okay, no. Chris.
Yeah, I don't think they should trade him. I mean, you had Cromartie, who made the Pro Bowl this year.
Yep.
You know, you got Revis coming back. At least your corners are set. The one landing spot could be, I mean, what he said, he'd like to see him as a Pittsburgh. You know, he went to Pitt. He's from Pennsylvania, so could be a landing point for him there.
Well, I think salary cap's going to be an issue there. I mean, you guys both know that wherever he's going to go, they're going to need to pay him. And well, they ain't got much cap room in Seattle.
He is in
Pittsburgh.
He is under contract. He's due a lot of money because he just, you know, he was a holdout, you know, a couple years ago.
Right. Well, so, I mean, that was the second time he was a holdout as well.
The thing is also is, I mean, Rex Ryan doesn't want to trade him.
Right.
Flat out doesn't. He actually helped negotiate for what Revis wanted, not on the GM side. He was more on Revis' side than get him back in.
Well, he was just a coach that wanted his best defensive player to stay around. Let's call it what it is. You know, but so you both are against the trade. Let me introduce this concept to you, gentlemen. Anybody remember a player by the name of Lawyer Malloy?
Yeah, Patriots, right?
Very good. Perhaps a Ty Law?
Yeah. Yeah.
Perhaps Richard Seymour. What do these gentlemen have in common? Anybody? Anybody? Anybody?
They all play for the Patriots.
Former Patriots, right. What happened to them? Now, in the case of Ty Law, it's a little different, but
they let him go.
They let him go. Why did they do that, Weasel?
To get new talent in.
To get new talent in. And what is the one thing the Jets need more than anything freaking else?
More talent in. But the thing is with the Patriots, though, they were the ones that they'd get these guys, take chances on these guys. They work out well, and then they want to get paid, and they're like, you know, I can just find someone else.
Ski gays.
So they leave. Right now with the Jets, they've proven they can't find anyone else. So when they find someone that is a gold mine, then they need to keep them.
No, and look, I abundantly understand that no one in the Jets organization is Bob Kraft nor Bill Belichick. I'm sorry, Bill Belichick. I'm aware of that. Don't get me wrong. But what would you say is the least valuable position on the football field? For my money, it would be the cornerback spot because that's the easiest part to help over. You got the safety. You could have a linebacker. Corner can jam it on and get help over the top. Defense in the NFL is a lot more of a team sport more than it is one-on-one lockups with man unless you're a heavy blitzing team. So, and let me be clear. I think Revis is awesome, too, but he's 8 years in. He's coming off an ACL injury. You can still get mad bank and compensation for him if you hold out for it. Somebody will pay it, so to speak. I mean, you know, just like think about the Clinton Portis and Champ Bailey trade. Well, the Broncos look like heroes in that trade, finally, just because they got more life out of Bailey than the Skins did out of Portis. Now, didn't really look like that in the AFC Divisional Playoffs when the Ravens, Torrey Smith, pounded him senseless, but that's not the point. The point is, I think the Jets are in such a desperate place that they need as many picks as possible. Chris, I know that they can't find the talent, which is all the more reason they need as many guesses in the game as possible. I'm just throwing that out there. You know.
throwing crap at the wall, seeing what sticks.
Exactly. Now, if they were inclined to trade Alex Smith for Darrell Revis and some picks, I'd consider it. I'm just saying. Seriously, how ridiculous would that defense be now?
We're just like, what's the point of playing 19 weeks of football or whatever and just give the Niners another crown?
San Francisco. I'll have to work on that. Anyways, they haven't got San Francisco yet. Let's not jinx it.
They're San Fran 5-0.
San Francisco. Yeah, that works. San Francisco. You like that? Huh? I mean, you know, we're only going to use it for about a week. Hi-yo! No, I need to stop that. I'm going to jinx my guys. Anyways, so with about 4.5 minutes left in the show, gentlemen, I'm going to go around. I know it's going to be off the cuff. I know you guys aren't ready for it. I'm pop quizzing the heck out of you. But give me some closing thoughts on the season in general leading up to the Super Bowl. Weasel, you look poised. I was going to go Chris, but you're like, go get it.
So thoughts on the season?
Yeah.
Well, I thought it was actually a pretty awesome season. There were a lot of rookie quarterbacks that played.
Yeah.
And they were actually produced. And you saw some new talent come in. And I liked how the Redskins, the organizations are pretty much turned around with these players. And
well, turned around and possibly crushed all in the same breath, depending on how RG3's injury goes. But I digress.
But this whole thing with the concussions and it put a bad light onto the NFL. But it sounds like they're at least trying to make the game more safer.
I appreciate that. Yeah.
So I thought, great season. I mean, the Patriots, they're not in the Super Bowl. Packers lost, and
Patriots not in the Super Bowl. You mentioned that as a good thing, but you do realize you picked them to win it, right?
Yeah, business. You got to go by what you think.
There you go.
So, but nah, it's been a great season, and look forward to the Super Bowl.
Yes, sir. Okay, with about 3 minutes left, Chris.
Yeah, it's kind of like a normal season. I mean, yeah, the amount of rookies that started and, you know, were successful on their teams.
Kind of like a rookie season, because every season you see a dude with 4 neck injuries bounce back and a guy bounce back from an ACL injury to get 2,000 yards.
Right, yeah, but I mean, I'm just saying, like how it is. You got the surprises, you know, the surprising teams with, you know, the Redskins making the playoffs, the Seahawks, the Colts making the playoffs, and then you get the disappointments with, you know, the Eagles. Jets and the Eagles and yeah, your normal wear and tear teams, but overall, this is a good season. One fantasy, so
one fantasy, and Weasel backed into the championship, so that's cool. You know, 5-8.
5-8.
5-8 makes it.
That's so bad. It's amazing.
I thought it was bad at 6-7 in my league. Made it. I was 11-2.
Anyways. So you've been listening to The Student of the Game here on the Sports Chronicles Radio Network. You will catch us 7:30 here on Blog Talk Radio every week. May have a short hiatus here after the Super Bowl. Still trying to work that out. But in the meantime, in the offseason, you'll probably catch us every other week. We'll be talking up drafts and prospects and current events and all that other happy stuff to keep you dealing with your football fix while you're without it in the offseason. You can also listen to me coming up here tonight at 10 o'clock Eastern for the NFL West Recess, that's presented by Football Reporters Online. Then on Thursday, Football Reporters Online also has their flagship show during the week on Thursday night, 9 Eastern. And then the Sports Chronicles Radio Show, the flagship for this current radio network here on Blog Talk Radio as well, at 10 o'clock. Had a great show this past week announcing iDraft. I can only imagine the craziness that will ensue as we make our final picks on that show and how much fun I can make of Nick. Hopefully he'll make the right decision this time involving a golden helmet as he picked Notre Dame in the national championship game. I did him a favor. I took his helmet off the mantle, slapped a SF logo on the side of it, and put it up on my mantle here in the house. I know I've used that joke, but for me it doesn't get old. I'm sorry for everybody else. I don't know. So, yeah, great season so far for sure. I love how you guys commented on the rookie quarterbacks. That's the thing most impressive to me is these guys are coming right out of the gate in 2012. The class of 2012 will be remembered for an extended period of time, especially when you consider the class of mediocrity we have coming from the quarterback position. It does not look good at all. Anyways, go ahead and follow us on Twitter at the SOTG. We'll see you to follow up the Super Bowl.
We know your business.